November 28th used to be observed as a national holiday in the days of the Kingdom of Hawaii. Lakuakoa marked the day the islands were first regarded as a sovereign nation and began the kingdom's history of diplomacy around the world. On that day last week, the State Archives had one of its treasured documents on display. It's called the Anglo-French Declaration, and it officially acknowledged Hawaii as a nation with standing equal to countries like France and England. Wednesday was the 175th anniversary of the signing of that treaty. Catherine Cruz sat down with archivist Ronald Williams Jr. as he explained what that day and that document mean to Native Hawaiians.
Well, the exhibit was a celebration of the 175th anniversary of the signing of the Anglo-French Declaration in 1843, one of the most seminal events in Hawaiian history. That signing of the declaration by the Queen of England and the King of France gave Hawaii sovereignty and recognition as a nation. So prior to that, they could make deals and so forth, but they weren't recognized as equals. This treaty or this declaration was saying Hawaii is a equal to England, France, and so forth. That launched Hawaii's diplomacy across the world, where they ended up opening up over 100 councils around the world.
Yeah. And we just saw the exhibit open at the Honolulu Museum talking about King Kalakaua's world travels. This right. ties in with that.
It does, very much so. I mean, the treaty was in 43. Kauikeoli, Kamehameha III, launched councils, started to launch councils across the world, but Kalakaua was the one who really kind of emphasized it and grew it exponentially.
And so tell us, what did you have on display here exactly?
Oh, so many fun things. We had the Hawaiian copy of that treaty, of that declaration. We had some of the original journals from the two men who went on the journey to try to gain that recognition. William Richards, a retired missionary, and Timoteo Ha'alelio, the first Hawaiian diplomat. He was a friend of Kauikeoli's, one of the first literate Hawaiians. He traveled on this almost impossible mission to go gain recognition for his nation. He got that recognition, and he died on the way home. So we have his actual calling cards that were in his pocket. We have letters from him. And then we focused on Hawaiian kingdom diplomacy. So we had council books and council letters and things like that from councils around the world. We had some from six of the seven continents.
These artifacts are something that people can access here at the State Archives.
Very much so. That's one thing that makes us kind of unique is that we're a public archive. Private archives have certain rules. They can be open when they want and closed when they want. They have certain rules of access. Sometimes there's a cost involved because they need to make money to support themselves. But as a public archive, anyone can walk in and request to see any of the documents we have and are allowed to see them. Now, having said that, there are some of the most precious documents. We need to make an appointment so we can have an archivist there with you. They can turn the delicate pages and so forth. But there's nothing that we have that they can't see.
So this was the 175th anniversary of this right. treaty. Who came out for this?
Oh, it was wonderful. We had such a diverse crowd. We had education. We had the 11th and 12th graders from Halau Kumana, the local Native Hawaiian charter school. We had folks from the community, folks that you wouldn't necessarily see out at the archives a lot. I was worried because it was a working day that we wouldn't get many folks, but we gave a talk to start the day, and we actually had to close the doors. There were people demanding to get in. We had about 250 to 300 folks come through that two-hour period here in the archives itself. So it was a wonderful crowd.
Did you have a favorite document that was on display?
Well, I had a couple favorites. One of them was a map that one of the archivists here made up of the councils, the Hawaiian Kingdom councils around the world. You know, we say that Hawaii had a presence around the world. This kind of made it visual. She had put the addresses of the councils into a Google Maps count thing, printed it out, and so we had a world map with 117 pins in it. From Santiago, Chile, from Pretoria, South Africa. These were places where the Hawaiian Kingdom had a presence. So folks seeing that really made it real for them that the kingdom was present around the world. The other thing that I enjoyed was there was a case that we had that talked about the responsibilities of consulates. So, you know, some folks tend to think of Kalakaua as, well, he liked to parade around in fancy uniforms and have fancy dinners. And so you think, well, yeah, we had consuls. But what they did was protect Hawaiian Kingdom subjects around the world. There was a case that we had a letter from Port Townsend near Seattle. And in the 1880s, there were Hawaiian sailors who had gotten off a ship in Port Townsend and hadn't been paid correctly by their ship captain. the Hawaiian Kingdom Council in Port Townsend wrote the Supreme Court Justice in Washington and got their money for them. So it was, it showed that they weren't just there for show, they were protecting Hawaiian Kingdom subjects around the world.
So this was a chance to really kind of showcase, I guess, the mission of the State Archives and some of the treasures that you folks hold here.
It really was. It's, you know, there are so many incredible treasures here at the State Archives, and the idea that they're accessible to the public, I think people know it generally, but when they see something like this, it reminds them of some of the incredible sources that are here.
Yeah. And some of the artifacts that you folks hold were on display over at for the Kalakaua exhibit. I think folks maybe were surprised that that exhibit included some of the things from here.
Yeah, the exhibit we held the other day were items that were solely from our collection. But in general, when museums, you know, do an exhibition like that, they'll include pieces from around the world. That exhibit that's going on at the museum until January 23rd, I believe, included things such as Walter Murray Gibson's diplomatic uniform, which is this bold, beautiful uniform sewed with gold thread, but that had a Hawaiian motif to it. And the idea is here are Hawaiians taking supposedly foreign inventions and making them Hawaiian to claim a place on the world stage. So yeah, some of the that vest and also many other items came from the State Archives.
And so you've marked this special day. It was a national holiday, and it was something that was really highly regarded in the Hawaiian community.
Yeah, 1843 was the signing. Starting in 1847, Kawikioli, Kamehameha III, asked his foreign minister to devise a way to celebrate, and he came up with, they were going to fire the guns at Punch Bowl, they were going to decorate the flag, the ships in town, and so forth. And from 47 on, it was declared a national holiday. So and at one point it was a 10-day holiday, which would be nice. But there were grand luaus, there were dances, there were balls, and things around this idea of this tiny nation. One thing I think that is important to keep in mind is no other nation in Oceania, across the Pacific, gained recognition before Hawaii did. And Hawaii was the first non-European-born nation in the world to gain recognition. So, you know, way before most countries, this tiny little dot in the Pacific gained recognition as an equal of France, the United States, and everybody else.
Yeah. And that day that you had the open house, you also had little mementos that you passed out to folks that were here.
Yeah, those were kind of one of my favorite things. So on the 30th anniversary of La Kuokua, November 28th, 1873, a group called Hui O Pio Pio, a young men's group, threw a grand luau on the grounds of Ioane Palace, Pohukaina, and they passed out formal tickets. We found one of those tickets in the collection of W.D. Alexander, and so we reproduced that ticket in its exact size and shape and color, and added our information on the back, and we handed those out, and those were selling like hotcakes, but they were free.
But it's you have so many treasures here, and I'm sure when you handle them, you know, they're probably very frail, but they need special care, and the fact that you folks can give the perspective and bring these artifacts back into that they find their place in present-day history. I mean, that's got to be very gratifying to the folks that work here at the State Archives.
It really is. You know, as I've only been here for about a year. Some of the folks have been here three decades or more. But I can, you know, speaking for myself, you never get jaded at feeling the mana in these palapala, the mana in these documents or artifacts. And so when you're pulling something out and you're, you know, I was looking at the Privy Council meeting minute books the other day from 1847, and I'm thinking, you know, this actual book sat in front of Kamehameha III, John Papa'i'i, David Malo, and others. So yeah, to be able to the archivists on staff are able to take care of those items, but actually once in a while to be able to show them to people and impact people's lives by knowing the history that came before is really rewarding.
Yeah. As part of that open house, you visited a gravesite on the premises here. Talk about that.
Well, one of the first native Hawaiian diplomat in the kingdom was Timoteo Ha'alelio. He was a close confidant of Kamehameha III. He was actually hanaid into Kamehameha III's family. He was chosen as one of the three diplomats to go around the world and try to gain this near impossible mission of recognition. He didn't want to go. He asked the king, please ask anything of me but this. He'd never been off the islands. And this young Hawaiian man, left Honolulu, or Maui, and went to Lahaina, or went to San Francisco, sailed down to Mazatlan, Mexico, They took burros across Mexico for months. He wrote letters home saying we had to swim across this river and we were starving. And they make it to the other side of Mexico, travel up to New York, go down to Washington, go on to London, Paris, where they were successful in their mission. And he writes a letter home from London to his mother and says how much he misses her, that it physically pains him. And on the way home, he dies of disease. And so they return with his body. So, honoring that man, this man who literally gave his life for the saving of his nation, was one of our missions also. When we had a talk on his life, Mehana Hind from OHA, who was our cult, was our protocol person for the day, she led us out to his burial grave, which is just on the grounds of the palace, about 30 feet from that building. And there were protocol performed, not only by her and other experts, but folks in the crowd were able to come in and offer a lay or offer the lay that they had gotten or so forth. The students at Halau Kumana gave an oli for Ha'ala Leo. And so that part of it was kind of an extra special addition to the day.
So that connection is kind of, it's really priceless.
Yeah, it really was. And talk about chicken skin, you know, when you're, you know, you're watching this and being part of this ceremony, and then there's this eruption of 50 or 60 voices in unison behind you chanting an aloha to his name. You know, it was moving.
Very powerful, powerful story.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing this with us.
Sure, thank you.
HPR's Catherine Cruz talking with archivist Ronald Williams earlier this week. For links to find out more about the diplomatic history of the Hawaiian Kingdom, check HawaiiPublicRadio.org.